You know, I've been summarizing, let me first summarize that here what you try to do is that try to write down some example of many body entangled states, which have all kind of so-called long-range entanglement. So therefore, we just want to write down some example. We are not concerned about if you give me a generic many body wave function, how do I compute the type of long-range entanglement in that wave function? So we are not considering that yet. We just want to write down some simple example. And we have discussed example using the string liquid or string net liquid. And we also discussed what's the definition of a topological excitation. That is an excitation which cannot be created locally. And we also have mentioned that the ground state degeneracy on the torus somehow equal to number of a topological excitation in the ground state, those kind of amazing property of this kind of long-range entanglement. And so in the last lecture also, we discussed a particular type of another type of a long-range entangled states. Again, just some simple examples. And these are related to quantum Mohr wave function. And here we emphasize that if you design the interaction to be like a delta function, then this delta function would select the zero energy states, which is this kind of symmetric polynomial. And this kind of symmetric polynomial would be a zero energy state of this interaction, and that would be the ground state of this of fractional quantum Mohr states. And they are very special, so wave function very nice, very special. If you select another interaction, like a delta function with a derivative, then we can select some other wave function like zi to zj to the fourth power. This will be the exact zero energy state of this interaction, and etc. And certainly our intention is that those states may have a long-range entanglement. And so they may have a non-trivial topological excitation. So as a consequence, you may guess that if I put those kind of system on a torus, then this exact zero energy ground state there will be degeneracy. There will be several of them. And that's may equal to number of quasi particle. So those kind of things are implied if you believe those wave functions have a non-trivial topological order. Okay, and so therefore using this, we can compute the ground state degeneracy on a torus by counting the number of topological excitations, which is we did here, is that we can multiply wave function like this zi to zj to the nth power, that's a filling fraction 1 over m wave function. We can multiply this wave function by this factor. And this factor, we try to argue, this carry fractional charge. So they are topological excitations. And then for the m, then we find that there is a precisely m minus 1 non-trivial topological excitation plus a trivial one, your total of so-called m topological type. So therefore, we believe that if you put this wave function on a torus, if you put that particular interaction Hamiltonian on a torus, you will find that there is an m-fold degenerate ground states, which m states exactly have zero energy, just by knowing that there is an m particle type. Okay, so that's one thing. And certainly, so we also argue this one have a this quantum party have a non-trivial fractional statistics. So now let's consider another wave function called this Pfaffian wave function. So this wave function actually is this wave function. It's this wave function. So this P wave pairing part times this Laughlin part. Okay. So then we have similar story that this wave function is the exact zero energy state of this three-body interaction. So you may ask, if you put this three-body Hamiltonian on the torus, how many zero energy degenerate ground state do you have? And actually the answer is a six. And for this one is three. Yeah, six is the Fermionic one. Yeah, the answer is a three for this particular one. Okay, and then you say, you know, how do you get a three? And so then you can also see what is a quasi particle in this state. So in the last lecture we went through it a little bit. So we can do a similar thing. We just multiply this C minus ZI, kind of like threading a 2-pi flux. If I'm threading a 2-pi flux through this, and then we'll create a quasi particle. However, because this wave function have a filling fraction 1, so threading 2-pi flux would accumulate a charge 1. Okay, so therefore this quasi particle would carry charge 1 because 2-pi flux create the charge 1 due to filling fraction, a Hall conductance, due to Hall conductance. Okay, but then this quasi particle, charge 1 quasi particle, you say charge 1 quasi particle actually should be trivial because this is a state formed by charge 1 particle. So therefore, maybe threading 2-pi flux, you create a bump. And this bump may correspond to adding the original particle, you know. And actually, this is not the case. This charge 1 particle is pretty special, and it's topological. So one way to see that the original particle is a boson, but this charge 1 particle turned out to be a fermion. Okay. And so why? Again, we kind of using this argument because we have this quantum Hall state. We thread a 2-pi flux, and that's induced because Hall conductance equal to 1, so induce a charge. This charge also equal to 1. Okay. So then you can braid this kind of flux charge bound state halfway around each other. Because if you braid halfway around each other, charge 1 go around the flux 2-pi halfway, give you an angle, which is a pi. So the 2-pi flux bound with the charge 1, in this case, have a statistics pi. So this is the fermion. And so this fermion is different from the original boson. So although this particle carry charge 1, it's a fermionic. So therefore, it's a topological. So this is already a topological quasi particle. And then you may say, okay, we have a trivial one, we have this non-trivial one, so have a two topological type. So degeneracy should be 2, but actually there's a smaller one because we have the parent wave function. We can put this factor inside the parent this factor. And once you put it inside the pairing, we find we can further split the position of particle by Kc and Kc star, Kc prime. We can further split. Okay, so somehow this charge 1 particle can be further split in 2 places. This is Kc, Kc prime, so into charge 1 half. But here, this statement is highly non-trivial. Because if you multiply this factor, you kind of think, yeah, maybe this one only create a local bump, a local dip. But when you split this one to 2 apart, you know, how do you know you have only 2 local dip? It's very possible that maybe the whole thing is non-local. There's a ridge between the two. Yeah, you know, it's just especially this this wave function very complicated. So actually we don't know. Yeah. So this is a big assumption that when you really split this Kc into 2 places, somehow the wave function still remain the same except near these 2 points. And so you have two local excitation, but this part is not really proven. But here we just we assume this is the case. If assume this case, then we say, okay, we have two excitation and each one have a charge 1/2. But this is assumption, and I don't know how to really prove this, and, but the people believe this is correct. So that's it. So we can further split it. Okay. And this actually gives you another topological type. So total, there's three topological types. Trivial one, charge 1/2, and a charge 1 fermion. So there's three types. Okay. Okay, so, but here the main thing here is that this charge 1/2 quasi hole actually have a non-abelian statistics. So this is maybe a simplest example to understand what is non-abelian statistics. And typically, one usually say that non-abelian statistics is coming from when you exchange two particles, you not only get a phase, you get a non-abelian barrier phase, you get a matrix. Okay. And here I want to emphasize that actually this notion is correct, but maybe a better way or maybe more fundamental way to understand the non-abelian statistics is to understand that there's an emergence of a topological degeneracy. Just like a quantum Hall state, when you put a quantum Hall state on a torus, there's a topological degeneracy which is robust against any perturbation. And here, here we create a quasi particle, it's like we have a sphere. But we have punctures, we may add punctures. And then the punctured sphere have an emergence of topological degeneracy. So this emergence of topological degeneracy probably is a more fundamental aspect of a non-abelian statistics. And so here I want to say that this kind of quasi particle indeed have this emergence of a ground state degeneracy. And so the emergence, the degeneracy appears falling in a way that even if we have a potential trap to trap those particles, so this position particle is totally pinned. So you can see that because those particles carry charge. Imagine we can use some kind of charged impurity to pin those particles. Even those particles are pinned, then the spectrum still have this degeneracy. Still have something like that. The spectrum with the trap would be there's a continuum, there's a gap, but in the ground state, there's a robust degeneracy, even when the quantum is fully trapped. So this is what I mean by this emergence of the topological degeneracy. So how do you understand that there's a degeneracy for these particular states? So here, let me just introduce some notation. So here we try to create four charge 1/2 particle. Do you have a question? Yeah.
Just to clarify, when you use this example of particle being trapped, you're meaning to illustrate that you can't move them around each other, but you still have the degeneracy.
That's right. Okay. So those particles, usually if you don't have a trap, this particle can move around. So particle in different place have the same energy. So you have a lot of degeneracy. So the degeneracy, you have maybe continuum spectrum. The degeneracy may be for order n. N is like a size of system. But however, when you trap those particles, then in the harmonic potential well, so their energy level became discrete. So even when the particle, you choose some particle to be the ground state for each harmonic potential well, there should be no degeneracy, but actually the whole system still have a degeneracy. And this degeneracy is that you cannot lift degeneracy by any perturbation. So that means topological. So this appearance of a topological degeneracy is a key for non-abelian statistics. And to see the degeneracy, we have to create a four charge 1/2 particle. Two is not enough, we have to do four, okay. So you do four, it's like we just include this factor for Kc1, Kc minus Zi, Kc2 minus Zj. Remember it's a pair. So this Kc1 coupled to the first particle in the pair, and the Kc2 coupled to the second particle in the pair. And then we have a, sorry, not notation. the Kc1 and the Kc2 couple to the first particle in the pair, and the Kc3, Kc4 couple to the second particle in the pair. So therefore, I just a shorthand, just write this factor on top. There's an exchange for the I and J, because the whole thing should be anti-symmetrized. So the factor on the top is written this symbol. So in 1, 2 is associated with the first particle in the pair, 3, 4 is associated with the second particle in the pair. So that is a way, just a shorthand way to write the wave function. But then you find something pretty strange, because you want to create a 4 particle, 1, 2, 3, 4. But somehow here we treat these 4 particles differently. We say the 1, 2 is associated with the first particle in the pair, 3, 4 is the second particle in the pair. So actually there's a several different way you can have a different assignment. You can see a 1, 3 associated the first particle, sorry, this should be 2, 4. 1, 4 is associated the first particle, and 2, 3 associated the second particle. You can have a different way of partition. So this is actually where the dynamics come from. You have several different ways to write down the wave function with the 4 particles with the different associations. And presumably, the belief is that at least for this ideal Hamiltonian, all those states have zero energy. For this ideal Hamiltonian, they all have a zero energy. And certainly we don't know whether there's a gap or not, but let's assume there's a gap. So now we have looks like we have for 4 quasi-particles, we have 3 wave functions which have exactly zero energy. The reason this one have zero energy is that this actual factor only produces zeros. It do not reduce any order of zeros. So for the 3-body Hamiltonian, this wave function remain to have a zero energy. But however, it's a work by Chaitin and Wilczek, is that actually these 3 wave function actually is the only, are not linearly independent. There are only 2 linearly independent wave functions. And so here's believe me, it's pretty simple algebra. Basically, you say this wave function, this difference of these 2 is given by some factor which contain zi minus zj squared. So therefore, if you consider the difference of these 2 wave functions, So we can using this, so we can express this 1, 3, 2, 4 in terms of 1, 2, 3, 4 with this actual factor, basically. Okay. And so this 1, 3, 2, 4, this 1, 2, 3, 4, this 1, 2, 3, 4 with actual. So here's it with this actual factor. Okay. And then we find that this 1, 3, 2, 4 can be related to the 1, 2, 3, 4 with this actual factor. Okay. And so with this, one can show that the difference of 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 3, 2, 4 will be some actual factor. Okay. And then you realize that if you do the similar thing for 1, 2, 3, 4 and 1, 4, 2, 3, just repeat but different pair, you get basically the same thing. Yeah. So this is a trick. Okay. So as a result, is that when you have a 4-pin quasi particle, there is a 2-fold degeneracy. But here I did not show that this 2-fold degeneracy is robust. And I just show for this particular Hamiltonian, there's 2-fold degenerate zero ground state, zero energy ground state. Okay. And so actually, Chaitin and Wilczek, they did more. They consider n pairs of those two n pairs. So here is a two pairs, and we can the two n pairs states, or maybe sorry, n. So here is a four. So for if you consider n charge one half quasi holes, it turns out for n charge one quasi hole, the degeneracy is one half square root of two times raised to n's power. So when n equal to four, this happened to be one half. Okay. They happen to be two, what we just computed. But if n is bigger than four, then you have something like that. But n always even, so therefore this one always integer. Okay. So this is one feature of non-abelian statistics, because in general, when you have n quasi holes, the degeneracy should be something like a square root of two raised to the nth power when you have n quasi holes. So one may try to associate this degeneracy with some kind of local degree freedom, like a spin. Maybe this particle carries spins, and then this spin can spin up, spin down, and then that's where you get the degeneracy. In particular, this degeneracy increase with particle numbers looks like this association is okay. But the number don't count, because if particle have a spin, like spin up, spin down, so each particle have a twofold degeneracy. So when you have n particle, should be have a two to the n. But here, we don't have square root of two to the n. So it looks like each particle have a square root of a spin. So the degree of freedom for each particle is not integer. It's a fractional. Okay. So actually, this kind of fractional degree of freedom give you some flavor of maybe this degeneracy is a topological. Because this degeneracy is not associated or cannot be associated with a local degree of freedom, which can couple some local probe. Then it somehow is everywhere. And so this kind of distributed everywhere degeneracy, they don't couple to anything. So therefore, they give you some flavor. It's more likely to believe, yeah, this kind of degeneracy may be very special. Maybe it's topological. So that's kind of a thing. That's another thing I want to say that maybe later we'll go back to this. Is that so in a sense, we really try to want to associate with some kind of vector space for each particle. But we couldn't, if you really try to associate the vector space to each particle, like a local degree of freedom, we cannot really do so. But on the other hand, we're really very tempting, because if you do that, then we have n particle with just a tensor product of this n vector space. Then we get a total vector space that's a degenerate ground state. So we couldn't really, but on the other hand, it doesn't really work. So what to do? Well, mathematicians have a way to do it. They say, although we do not have a vector space associated with a particle, let's imagine we have a formal one. The one which is not vector space, but we're still using V to denote it. And we still formally say we can have a tensor product of two V together to build another vector space. But all these have no interpretation vector space, unless when those particles can fuse into something like a so-called identity, a trivial particle. So when they fuse into trivial particle, then this V become really a vector space. But if these particles are not trivial, they are fractionalized vector space. So basically, give you some way to introduce a notion of fractionalized vector space. So this fractional vector space, when you fuse them together, and eventually, if this particle fuses into something trivial, will become the Euro vector space. And then mathematicians say, okay, so we have something which is not vector space, but satisfy all the operational rule of vector space. You can do tensor product, and you can the tensor product associative and all that. And so this kind of thing seems works. And so actually, this kind of formulation is what you call the fusion category theory. So fusion category theory actually is a formalized way to define the tensor product of a vector space, even when the vector space is not vector space. Yeah, so basically it's kind of formal. And you may wonder why such formal things are useful, but actually here you can see it's very useful. Because although the degenerate ground state is a vector space, but we couldn't associate a vector space to each particle, but we can associate something formal to each particle and develop certain mass about it. Okay.
What does it mean to say you have a particle that does not have a vector space?
For this four particle, we know the ground degenerate is twofold. So the four particle have a twofold degenerate, twofold vector, two-dimensional vector space associated with. And so let's forget this. To be more precise, you can even say it have a four dimension if you allow to add particles. So here we fix total number of bosons. If you allow to change the number of bosons, this twofold degenerate can become fourfold degenerate. Maybe this is more convenient. So actually, if you allow number of bosons to change, so for four particle have a fourfold degeneracy. Vector space is a fourfold degenerate. But for fourfold, you cannot distribute into each one. So four is actually equal to square root 2 raised to the 4. So the degree, we don't have enough degree freedom. So for people who are familiar with the P plus P superconductor, so actually this is very similar to this, what happened to P plus P superconductor. That is, each quasi-particle have so-called Majorana zero mode. A pair of Majorana zero mode give you a complex fermion, which have twofold degeneracy. So four of them give you fourfold degeneracy. Yeah.
So the particles have a vector space, but
the... No, the particle don't have vector, have a...
Just the contribution to the degeneracy
Only the total thing is a vector space. And so the main thing is that we want to associate something abstract to each particle, which allow us to construct the total thing. So basically the formulation we have is that when we have enough of quasi-particle, and we can always construct to total vector space, which is this degenerate ground state subspace. But however, this total vector space coming from something local, from each point. But this something local is not like each point carry a vector space. We cannot do that. Usually, it says if a total vector space coming from something local, if each one carry a vector space, then total vector space is tensor product of a local vector space. This is a usual picture. But for now, building statistics that this picture almost works, except the thing associated with each particle is not really a vector space. It's something which allows you to make a vector space. So vector space allows you to make a vector space, but the mathematicians say there's something more abstract, which have ability to always make a vector space, but themselves are not a vector space. So this something strange is we can call it a fractionalized vector space. So this topological order is also have a fractionalization, but it's not fractionalization of charge, but the non-abelian topological order have a fractionalization of a vector space. So therefore the non-abelian quasi-particle carry fractionalized vector space, which describes its internal degree freedom. You can say that way. Yeah. Okay. So this basically is an example, a simplest example. So Majorana zero mode is probably more familiar example for this fractionalized vector space. Okay, so this five-in wave function is one example which can have this non-abelian statistics. So here I just described there's an extension with non-abelian statistic. And this five-in wave function is a give rise that. So next question is that, is the five-in wave function the only state have this property? Do we have other example for non-abelian statistics? which not other example wave function which produce non-abelian statistics. So this this come to the issue about how do you systematically and quantitatively describe a quantum power wave function, this zero energy wave function. You know, we just gave three examples. You know, the three examples we gave is ZI minus ZJ square, ZI minus ZJ, fourth power, those are very similar. Then we have this ZI minus ZJ, but with some kind of a fuzzing part, 1/ZI/ZJ, some pairing part. Okay, so just give three examples of the wave function. But whether there is a systematic or a general way to describe all the wave function of this kind, you know. And actually there are. So the most systematic way is very much like a BCS theory. You know there's a many superconductor. We're using this pairing wave function to describe them, the S wave, D wave, P wave, etc. But the pairing wave function is really describing the relative angular momentum of two electrons. So when you pick up two electrons in the BCS superconductor, if these two electrons belong to a pair, you say their relative angular momentum can be zero, S wave, D, so two is will be D wave, etc. So here we do the similar thing. We just pick two electrons from a quantum power wave function to see what is their relative angular momentum. You know, you say, oh, there's all kinds of relative angular momentum. So you ask, what is the minimal one? You know, you can expand this relative wave function with two particles and ask, what is the minimal relative angular momentum? So let's look at it. So here, the minimum relative angular momentum will be two. Here will be four. And here, well, if you pick your pair in this pair, then this would cancel this, so this would be zero. Okay. So this is one way to understand that. But here there's a difference, is that because of this anti-symmetrization, basically, if you pick any pair, I think this probably same thing is true also in superconductor. If you pick any pair of electron, ask what is the minimal relative angular momentum, you always get this 2, 4, and 0. But if you only do two electron relative angular momentum, it's not enough. You need to also do three electron, four electron, etc. So this is a generalization. So not only we consider two electron relative angular momentum, we also consider minimal three electron relative angular momentum, minimal four electron relative angular momentum, and etc. So this gives us a sequence of integer we call the SA, so S2, S3, and etc. So those are these minimal relative angular momentum. So for the Fafi, here's a filling function 1/2 Fafi. So this is a Fermanic version of Fafi. So we have a square here. So this is a Fermanic wave function. And so this one, the minimal relative angular momentum is actually so one. And then for the 1/3 Laughlin state, so if you put the three here, then you can see that this will be 3, 9, 18. Here is the 1, 5, 10, etc. There's a sequence. Okay. So that's it. And maybe this is a quantitative way to describe the structure of this wave function. And then we can try to develop a theory based on this kind of a relative angular momentum, which we call pattern of zero. Okay, and so then it's so we can try to do that. So if you give me a sequence, then I can give you the wave function. Then I should be able to compute whether it's abelian or non-abelian and what kind of non-abelian. You know, for the first sequence is abelian quantum power state, and the second sequence will be non-abelian quantum power states. You know, how do you see that? And turns out that this kind of picture is very closely related to the conformal field theory. And so maybe I'll try to tell the story here. And so first let's try to understand this pattern a little better. What is a sequence really means? Okay. And so So first, this this filling function one states have this sequence, filling function 1/2, this and four and five pin is this one. This bosonic five pin is this one. Okay. So what this sequence really means? So first, we want to say that this difference, so SA minus SA minus 1, so the difference of two consecutive integer is called LA. So maybe let's do this. SA have a meaning that if you consider a quantum Hall state with a finite number of electrons, and this number is A, happen to be A, then the total angulamentum of this quantum Hall droplet happen to be this SA, this relative minimal relative angulamentum. So therefore, this SA have another meaning, is that its A electron wave function have a total angulamentum SA. Then using this interpretation, we can see that this LA means that if you have an electron, a droplet of A minus one electron and a droplet of A electron, their total angulamentum will differ by LA. The angulamentum increase by LA. And what that means the following. Remember, this wave function basically is filling those lambda orbit, circular orbit, which each one have an angulamentum L. If you add the AC electron, then you find that this A electron increase angulamentum by LA. That means if you occupy a particular orbit, it's LA. So therefore, if you know the sequence SA, then you basically know how the electron fill those orbits. And so for example, for this filling function one state, the SA just 1, 0, 1, 3, 6, 10. So it looks strange, but however, if you compute the difference, it will be very regular. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's consecutive integers. So that means for this kind of wave function, the electron just fill all these orbits consecutively. And that's what you expect. That's a filling function of one quantum Hall state. We fill all the level in the first lambda level. And then for this ZM and ZJ square, then that sequence is this, which is double for this sequence, which is just a double. Then certain LA also double. Now instead of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, it becomes 0, 2, 4, 6, 10. So they skip orbit. So they fill every other orbit. So this will have this kind of filling pattern. 0, then you skip one, then it's a 1 and skip one. So therefore it's better, you're not using L, it's better using N. So N is occupation number. So basically N count how many how many times a particular value L appears. This is a very awkward way to say. So like N zero means say how many L equal to zero appears in this spectrum? The answer is a 1. How many times it appears? 1 time. So therefore, N0 equal to 1. N1 means how many times L equal to 1 appear in this sequence? The answer is 0. There's no 1. So this is 0. So N2 means how many times L equal to 2 appears in the sequence? Well, this is 2. So this only 1 time. 2 appear 1 time. So this is 1 here. So this occupation number picture. And N is most convenient. So actually you can see that this wave function have this kind of occupation picture. And then from here, it's easy to see that this one filling function 1/2, because if you fill every orbital filling function 1, if you fill half of them, filling function 1/2. So from SA sequence, immediately see the filling fraction of a quantum Hall state and the Hall conductance. And then for the 1/4 again similar, just fill every 4 orbitals. The five-in state is interesting. The five-in states, if you do this, we got this kind of S just counting, just counting the power of polynomials. The L is like this 0, 0, so you can 0 appear twice, 2 appear twice, 4 appear twice. So therefore, n0 means that the l equal to 0 appear twice, so n0 equal to 2. And n1 means l equal to 1 appear 0 times, so n1 equal to 0. n2 is that l equal to 2 appear twice, so n2 equal to 2. So again, you can see occupation number. And from here, you can see that this Farthing wave function have a filling fraction 1, because although occupation not uniform, but on average, 0, 2, 0, 2, 0 on average is 1. So this is consistent with our picture. And the filling fraction here is 1. Okay, so actually this one have a, I don't know whether I have a reference or not. Yeah, so this kind of pattern is very much like a one-dimensional CDW. It's a sequence of numbers, density modulating. So actually this kind of a pattern was first discovered by, I think, Stell and Donghai Li and et cetera. Also Haudan and Rezai also consider this. And so what they consider is fun is dimension reduction. So suppose you can see we have ideal Hamiltonian in two dimension, and those wave functions exactly zero energy states. Because we have ideal Hamiltonian, we can consider our 2D manifold to be a thin cylinder with this delta function interaction. And we can ask, what is the exact zero energy states of this special dimension reduced 1D Hamiltonian. And so it turns out that the exact zero energy state of this dimension reduced 1D Hamiltonian indeed is Schottky density wave. And have this pattern, actually. The electron just occupy this lambda orbital like that. The way to look at is a falling. When you have a thin cylinders, you know the orbit in the first the lambda level, sorry, the single particle eigenfunction in the first lambda level have this kind of orbit, you know, in the Landau gauge. So that's this is a wave function is like that. Certainly, if a cylinder is very thin, because each wave function they should have they have area of 2 pi, they cover a single flux quanta. So if a cylinder is very thin, their spacing is very far apart. However, if a cylinder is very thick, this wave function may overlap. And that's approaching 2D limit. So when they separate, there's a 1D limit. But since we have this delta function interaction, we have this exact zero energy states. So everything is exact. So therefore, for this particular delta function interaction, this kind of 1D lattice system may have a ground state. And the claim is that this is CDW state we obtain. OK. Then there's several issues. First, this cylinder can be a torus. We can glue these two together, it gets a torus. Then we should get degeneracy. Well, the degeneracy happens to be what we want because these states, sorry, I got the wrong, this should be 4. I changed it here, now changing here. So these states, this filling fraction, a quarter state should have a degeneracy of 4 on torus. And this CDW explained that, because when you have a periodic boundary condition, the whole system of translation run. We don't have a starting point. So therefore, this pattern can shift. And you can see that this pattern has a break, have a Z4 symmetry breaking, so you can shift this pattern. So there's indeed the 4-4 degeneracy. So therefore, this 4-4 degeneracy of this topological nature in the dimension reduction, it became a symmetry breaking, translation symmetry breaking. Okay. And then, how about this one? For Farthing states, also break translation symmetry, so I have a 2-4 degeneracy, and which is wrong. there should be threefold dependency. So actually, this designed three-body interaction on the dimension reduction should have a threefold dependency, not twofold dependency. But however, this symmetry breaking picture only gave you twofold dependency. So what's going on? It turns out that this specially designed Hamiltonian indeed have these two degenerate, two zero random states have these two patterns. Okay. But this special design dimension reduction reduce one this system have another zero random state, which is a 1, 1, 1, 1. And this is unusual. You know, why this state and this state should be degenerate? It's unusual, it's kind of accidental, because I have very specially designed three-body interaction, and this special designed 1D system indeed have this degeneracy. Okay. So actually this became, I think this became a very interesting direction of research. You know, as I mentioned that in a few lectures before, is that there is the topological order have an emergence of a symmetry. And one example is that, you know, we have a topological order described by Z2 gauge field. Then the Z2 charge behave like emerging symmetry for this, for the sector when you have Z2 charge flowing around. Although original Hamiltonian have no symmetry at all, but however, because you have a topological order, when you have a gas of Z2 charge in the particle, then this you have emergent Z2 symmetry. Okay. But however, there is more, because the topological order not only have a particle-like excitation, we have a string-like, a membrane-like excitation. So there is emergent symmetry associated with the string and the membrane, such all these things. And so in particular, as I mentioned, that this string net model we considered have a string operator which really commute with Hamiltonian. So you have this string-like symmetry. So this is called a Q-form symmetry in a recent paper by Davidi and Kapustin and Seiberg, etc. So I believe something similar may happen here is that this low energy subspace we worry about have this emergent symmetry. So basically, you can construct some kind of string operator, or maybe membrane operator. Here probably is a string operator. You can construct some string operator, which actually they commute with a low energy effective Hamiltonian for this degenerate subspace. Basically for this zero energy subspace. Zero energy subspace may contain actual emergent symmetry. This emergent symmetry may be this Q-form symmetry described by string operator. So there's a kind of interesting to say that this actual symmetry may be responsible for this. So therefore this dimension reduction may have a quite interesting feature here.
So if you have a finite size system in the torus, but you don't have the ideal Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
Then the first two would be exactly degenerate by translational invariant, but the other one would be split, let's say, right?
No, they don't split. This exact Hamiltonian is such that all the three states have exactly zero energy.
Right, for the ideal one. But if you have a generic Hamiltonian, but
when you add a perturbation, you break them. So actually, this became an issue. What I try to say is that can we identify the feature of 1D Hamiltonian that guarantee this? So basically, if you identify some kind of such string symmetry, so actually you can do this for toroidal model, for example. So then you may have this. And so this this is because here, you know, when I first looked at this paper, so this is nice, you got a very nice picture, but they are not generic 1D property, you know. You're talking about a fine-tuned design property. But now I feel that this fine-tuned design problem may have a reason behind it. It's that there's an emergent Q-form symmetry. And so therefore, if you identify this symmetry, then you say there's some actual symmetry, actual condition on the Hamiltonian, then any perturbation of Hamiltonian such as this condition would always have this feature. So that's that is the point. Yeah. So basically what I'm trying to say is that the 2D system has emergent symmetry, and for this ideal 2D system, when you do dimension reduction, this emergent symmetry actually shows up in 1D system as an effect as the degeneracy of these three kind of states, which sounds very strange. But this kind of feature is very, very important. And later we'll see that this kind of degeneracy, actually the main wall of this space is a quasi-particle. It's non-abelian quasi-particle. That's another way to look at non-abelian quasi-particle. It's like a domain wall between those specially degenerate states. And so here that's you know, for quasi-particle that's another thing, but here there's just one who, yeah, let's say there's a dimensional reduction connection which just looks very interesting. And but now there's a classification problem. Is that we say that for every symmetric polynomial of any polynomial, we can produce a sequence of SA, which we call pattern zero, or this Angulomantium of A particle. And but here we want to classify this kind of polynomial. In a sense, we say, but we have facing problem is that not every sequence corresponds to polynomial. Only certain special sequence gave rise to polynomial. So we want to find the condition on the sequence of those integers. So that once the sequence integer satisfies those conditions, then we get a polynomial. So basically, this will allow us to classify symmetric polynomial from a local property. The sequence, the integer actually the local property, is really the relative Angulomantium of A variables. From this local property, can we classify all the symmetric polynomial with this local, with this local, with the same local property? And so the answer is yes. And so the important thing is to derive a condition on those sequence integers. And so let me just quickly do that. And so it's helpful to introduce derive the polynomial. Okay, so what is derived polynomial? The derived polynomial is the following. Maybe let me just say this. Then look at this. So what we did is following. So we start with a polynomial of many many variables. Okay. Then what we did is that we replace the So what we did is that we replaced the first A variable. So I from 1 to A, we replace first A variable as something ZA. Deviate by something small amount. So this is a little distance, a small distance. So basically we say this Zi for the first A variable more or less as near Za. We just bring this A point together. So then this polynomial would become something, this lambda go to zero. So this lambda tell you how far apart those the size of this A cluster. And this Sa is a leading term. Leading order of zero, and then we get this something which may depend on this Kasi. Kasi is something order of one, which is shape. Okay, then this average position, the center mass position, and the rest of variable. So this actually we can rewrite this polynomial in this way, then up to in the leading order of a lambda. And here we make one crucial assumption is that this shape independence. So this polynomial do not this polynomial as a variable ZA, ZA plus one, etc., they do not depend on the shape of the KC to KCA. So this shape just a fact can be taken out. So this is a crucial assumption. And then if this works, then we obtain a polynomial with the first A element bundled together into a single variable. Okay. And we can repeat that. We can bundle next B variables together in the same fashion. Then we get this one. Or we can have a C electron bundled together to get VC. So all those are kind of bound state. This A cluster, B cluster, C cluster. And they themselves also have a polynomial. So this polynomial is called a derived polynomial. So this notion help us to derive the condition. Then clearly that we have this, if we have a cluster and a B cluster approaching each other, we should have a zeros. So this is a zero is a DAB. So the DAB just describes a zero between A cluster and B cluster. Okay, so it turns out that this DAB contains same information as SA, because SA, DAB can express each other. They can, you can easily check. So therefore we can also use DAB to describe this pattern zero. Then it's easy to derive a condition on DAB. So that's why we do DAB. So let's consider we have a A cluster fixed here, B cluster fixed here, we move in C cluster around. We're just moving this, these two are fixed, we're just moving this around. Okay, then we see that as you're moving the C cluster around the A cluster, because you have a zero, you have a DAC zero, that's the order of zero when ZC approaches ZA. So there's so when you go around that, we get a 2 pi times DAC, that's a phase change when you go around ZA. Similarly, if a ZC go around the ZB, then the total number of phase change is a 2 pi times DBC. Okay. But then we want to ask, if a C go around a cluster which AB fuse together, if we further fuse A and B together, what is a C, what is zero when C approach the fusion for A and B? You say, oh, it's maybe just a DAC plus DBC. Well, it's not quite the case. Because when you start to fuse the 2 points together, there are off particle zeros. Because this is the function for ZC may become zero. This function may become zero when ZC not located at any particle. So they're so called off particle zeros. So when you're fusing this AB together, some off particle zero may also fuse together. They tie together, they have to fuse together. So we only have an inequality. That is zero between AB and C, A plus B and C is bigger than AC plus BC. We only have inequality because we could have an actual off particle zeros. And so therefore, this condition, we can translate back to the condition on S, which is this condition. You know, we use S, this is rather like this, what is the subadditivity of entanglement entropy? I don't know why. So it's really, you know, S is really this. And certainly, the DAB has to be bigger than zero. So DAB is, this is DAB, this is always bigger than zero. So S also have this condition. So you have two concave condition on S. And so what? It's amazing that because these two concave condition, usually this inequality doesn't mean anything. You just get some bound, some boundary. But it turns out that these two concave conditions are very powerful. Because these two concave conditions should be satisfied for every pair of AB, for all the ABC, etc. It turns out that we can use this condition to totally determine S, A, and B. Okay, so this is so there's some additional thing which maybe I don't want to bother with. So this is a basic, this is a solution we can get. So by solving these two concave condition, then we can get many, many solutions. Okay. But however, we can organize all the solution in the following way. I think you probably noticed that the sequence of zero, like we have here, this sequence looks pretty ugly. But when you're written in terms of n, they become periodic. So you can always write this in the periodic structure. So what is the periodicity? And so basically, this is the way we write down the solution is that it's a falling. In terms of how many particles per period. Okay, so here there are three particles per period, so we call this a three cluster state. And here I have two particles per period. So n, this is just a period, there's 2, 0, 2, 0. Two particles per period because two cluster state, etc. So those are those kind of more general states. So like this five cluster state, there's five particles per period, but this period have 8 sites. So using this, you can find many solutions. So basically, this is a way to generate a lot of polynomial, which potentially may become a non-abelian states. Okay, so I think I would stop here. Certainly, there's a lot of questions. What can you use this pattern of zeros to derive the excitation? For example, how many excitation? What is the ground state degeneracy on a torus? You say almost like, say for this case, at least eightfold degeneracy because you can translate 8 times. But you may have actual degeneracy. So what is the actual one? And then if you say, if this pattern zero gave rise to non-abelian statistics, then which one? And later we'll say that the non-abelian statistics are described by a so-called modular tensor category. So looks like for every pattern zero can produce a modular tensor category theory. So this is a pretty amazing thing that maybe can we use this pattern zero to classify modular tensor category theory. So maybe this is a way to classify modular tensor category theory. So that's much easier, just compute a bunch integer, you get a list of all modular tensor categories here. And in that case, certainly I don't have really answer for this, but it would be interesting direction to think about. So by space, this is trying to construct this generic theory, and it's really trying to understand that this emergence of non-abelian statistic in a very general setting. So this may be a framework to do so. Okay, I will stop here. Yeah. Any questions? Yeah.
So about the modular tensor categories, how about for non-chiral case? So
here, non-chiral case, those are purely chiral one. And non-chiral case, you can always, you can combine this with it's a time reversal. But there's only a sum of non-chiral case. And there's more general mixed one. I don't know, yeah. So that I don't know. And but this is indeed a quite interesting thing. Is that this pattern zero give you a kind of general way to construct many, many wave functions, many polynomials. And we know in 2+1 dimension, we have all kind of non-abelian statistics described on the tensor category theory and whether there is these two connection. And this is related to something people actually already done in conformal field theory. Actually, maybe that's how modular tensor category theory appear in physics. It's really via conformal field theory. People try to use modular tensor category theory to classify rational conformal field theory. So it turns out those kind of pattern zero and this polynomial wave function is very, very close related to conformal field theory. So this kind of thing can really fall into the same program that maybe this multi-transfer category theory and the conformal field theory and labeling statistics are all pretty close related. And the quantum Hall states is happen to be the physical system which connect all this part of mathematics. Yeah. But however, there's the detail is not very clear. Certainly in this construction, we only do so-called purely chiral theory. Well, the purely chiral theory gave you all the multi-tensor category theory or not, we don't know. Certainly multi-tensor category theory contain everything, including non-purely one. And but whether purely one is enough to produce those things, you know, that's a question. We don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
This last sequence, the 1111 for the Fabian, so this one does not appear in the pattern of zero construction, right?
They appear.
It appears.
So what happens really that's you know, here I just do ground states. When I do ground states, so the solution, you know, so this Fabian solution is this is a Fabian state, 2 0 2 0 2 0. We can only get, I don't get 1 1 1 1. But the 1 1 1 appear when you try to study quasi particles. In the ground state, it's only one. But however, for the quasi particle, you get you also get the other one, 0 2 0 2, and 1 1 1. So when you study quasi particles, they appear. I think I will. Maybe on Thursday, maybe I will do that to do quasi particles. Yeah.
You know, on the real left model with the large order, so what's the lifetime for the quasi particles?
Lifetime. Should be infinite. I mean,
they
do not decay. The reason is that this thing have an energy, quasi particles have an energy gap. So we have a few of them, they all became, there's no phase space for them to decay into something with a lower energy gap. However, I should have taken back. So there's many, many quasi particles. And one of them have a zero and have minimal energy gap. This one do not decay, but there are other quasi particle may have a higher energy gap, and they may be able to decay into something into lower energy gap quasi particle. But those are not universal features. This really depend on the details, and which quasi particle are stable, which quasi particle are measurable, and will be interesting. And also, this quasi particle very very interesting because you know, I only discussed this particular topological order state. We did not discuss the phase transition. So I believe that the phase transition between different topological order states are always induced by the condensation of quasi-particle. You just pick a quasi-particle and let this quasi-particle energy gap go to zero and negative. You may get a new topological order states. And this may be a generic way to understand the phase transition between the topological order. And but so this is very open, so there's a very few paper on this kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So I wonder whether this concave conditions are related to the condition that wave function is gapped.
Yeah, this is not quite. So let me put it this way. Since I didn't really mention this. So this SA, it turns out, so all these things are related to conformal field theory. So this polynomial you try to construct actually is a correlation function of some kind of field in the conformal field theory. Okay. Then if you use in conformal field theory language, this SA have an interpretation that they're coming from the scaling dimension of conformal field. So actually this concave condition is conditioned on the scaling dimension of the conformal field. I think in conformal field theory, maybe there is a similar concave condition. Scaling dimension cannot be arbitrary. So what I try to do here actually is that is falling in conformal field theory. If you give me a scaling dimension of a conformal field, do I know the full conformal field theory? And usually the answer is no, we don't. Because in OPE, we not only need to know the conformal dimension, we also need to know the structure constant. And we don't have anything about the structure constant here. And this program is not quite successful. It's a halfway because we don't have structure constant. But it's more successful than I expect it should be. Without stretching condition, you should get nothing. You should get you lost too much information. But amazingly, for many simple cases, actually, at least for the case we consider here, the simple solution, all simple solution here, knowing scaling dimension already determines stretching constant.
Do you also have some solution that has power law correlation function like that?
Okay, so with this, let me try to say again. That's that. However, the conformal field theory coming from those pattern zero do not have to be unitary. There are non-unitary, non-rational conformal field theory, which also produced by this pattern zero solution. And then this became the number one problem in quantum state is that the pattern zero coming from unitary rational conformal field theory appear to be gapped ground state of a local Hamiltonian. And the one coming from non-unitary conformal field theory is gapless. I don't know why, you know, this connection totally wild, you know. But looks like phenomenologically, that seems the case. And but we don't have this connection at all, you know. This is non-unitary, somehow the correlation function of a non-unitary conformal field theory, we're using the norm of the wave function as a definite inner product. You get algebraic language correlation. But the one from the unitary conformal field theory, at least from a simple one, you only get a Schrödinger correlation at equal time. So actually, right now we are using this kind of religions. Say, the unitary conformal field theory can produce gapped quantum wave function, and then using this, then can using conformal field theory to classify a label gapped quantum Hall states. So this is the most important assumption that is here. Unitary conformal field theory gave you a gap quantum wave function so that you can use unitary conformal field theory try to label classify this purely chiral topology order. So this kind of program seems to lead us to in that direction. And but this big assumption why unitary conformal field theory gave a gap state, non-unitary one gave a gapless state, we still don't know. It's very mysterious. Okay, yeah, I think we'll stop here.